20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You are legendary for being here. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. We've got you covered 365 days a year, usually 2 to 3 episodes almost every single day. And 2,700 some, I don't even know where we're at in the pantheon of Pack-A-Day podcasts. We are officially, I believe today, at 2,471st episode. It's actually our 2,471st consecutive day with there being 3 episodes per day. We're actually at way more than that, but I digress. It's good to have you here and I appreciate it a ton. We've got Savion Williams today, Savion Williams deep dive day. And let me just tell you right now, I've been doing these for a while, whether via YouTube, podcast, or in written form before that. This is my favorite one that I've ever done up until this point. I'm pretty certain that I feel pretty confident in saying that. That's not to say he's my favorite player. It's not to say I think he's going to turn out the best or turn out the worst. It's just, this is my favorite deep dive that I'm excited to get into, like any of them that we've ever done for rookies. That's how unique of a player he is. And it was so fun going through his tape. I mean, just ridiculously fun. Just jaw-dropping at times, like, oh my God, like legitimately like cackling at some of the stuff that he could do. But then also like, oh my God, what was that? Like just there's so much. You want to talk about a pure and utter roller coaster ride. My hope today is to bring you on some of that journey, because when you go through his tape, you definitely gain that experience of just some of the most exhilarating stuff that you could possibly imagine. And then other times you're like, oh, what was that? Oh, why did that happen? So we'll talk through that through the course of today. Like I said, very excited to get into that. Just a couple of really quick news and notesy sort of things. First of all, Papa D, thank you so much for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. If you can become a member, if you're interested, make sure to check that out. A bunch of different options that are available out there for you. Otherwise, you know, just come back and watch, tell a friend, like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. Those are all things that help the channel a ton. Next is we've got Devontae Wyatt, 5th-year option. That one was pretty clear that that was going to happen. There's always the chance that maybe they figured out some sort of longer term extension between now and the 5th-year option. I still think that's probably on the table. Just because they've picked up the 5th-year option does not mean that those negotiations potentially end. We could still see at some point a, you know, extension here for Wyatt beyond just the 5th-year. There's also just a strong chance that they let the 4th-year play out. They've got him next year on the 5th-year and they kind of now figure that out in year 5. Which I think is probably the more likely scenario. There's no real need at this point. You don't need the salary cap space. And certainly if you wanted to, next year would probably be the year in that 5th-year option where it's guaranteed money and everything like that, where you maybe look to do some renegotiating of that and sign an extension. But I think for this year, he's on a cheap deal this year, you know, considerably. And then, or all things considered, I should say. And then next year, you have, again, the opportunity to still a full year plus of working on a contract. So that one's probably done. The other one is Quay Walker. With Quay, you have the situation where the linebacker 5th-year option is just insane because they include the linebacker, 3-4 outside linebackers in it, and it's just, it sucks. They need to fix it. It's a terrible situation, and off-ball linebackers are put in kind of disadvantageous situations if they want that 5th-year option picked up. So with that, I don't think Quay's 5th-year option is going to get picked up. But as we heard Gutekunst say a couple weeks ago now, they do fully expect him to be a Packer in 2026 and potentially beyond. One of two things will very likely happen here. Number one is, again, they work out some sort of compromise between the 5th-year option and, you know, it's probably something a little bit less than that, similar to what they did with Jordan Love. Or they just work out an extension, you know, 3-4-year deal between now and next year. Do not be stunned or shocked if the only move that's made is that they decline his 5th-year option and then just work aggressively on a contract over the course of the next, you know, probably the rest of the offseason. You know, that's probably the time frame that you're looking at. I just don't think there's a world in which, I don't think you want to do it the other way, basically, where you give him that 5th-year option And then it really kind of gives Quay and his agent more leverage because they would just want to play on the fifth year option next year. So I would be pretty surprised if we get an alert or update that the Packers picked up the fifth year option. But either way, I would expect some sort of either 1 year compromise or an extension to get done with Quay. So kind of keep an eye out for those sort of things over the course of the next few days or so. And we should get a little bit more of an update on that sooner rather than later. The only other piece of news is that we got some rookie numbers. And these are always a hot topic. And what numbers are players going to wear? They look good. Is it a ridiculous number? Well, we already knew that Matthew Golden was number 22. So do with that what you will. Number 22, wide receiver, Matthew Golden. Anthony Belton is number 71. That is a choice number for Anthony Belton. You got a little Kevin Berry, you bacon vibe at number 71. If he's a tackle and that same, you know, big guy size, if he goes inside, a little bit of Josh Sitton to him. So I like that number for Anthony Belton. Savion Williams, 83. It's okay. I can deal with 83. No major issues there. Baron Sorrell, 99. Outside of the fact that 99 has kind of been low-key cursed for a while, there's not really been a lot of great stuff going on with any of the number 99s as of late, even going back to Jamal Reynolds. Corey Williams was pretty solid at 99, but it's probably been since Corey Williams. I'd have to kind of go and look at it a little bit greater detail. Let's do it right now. Packers, number 99 history. All right, so we've got, as of late, Jarrell Worthy, not great. Corey Williams, okay, like again, solid there. Jeremy Thompson was a bust that they traded up for in the fourth round. Christian Ringo didn't work out. Jamal Reynolds didn't work out. Mike Montgomery didn't work out. James Looney didn't work out. Ricky Jean-Francois, forgot about that. Jonathan Ford didn't really work out. Don Davey back 91 to 94. You know, you're really looking at... Corey Williams. That's about it. So 99 has been a little bit of a cursed number, especially as of late, especially for defensive linemen. So not that there's anyone else really wearing it, but you get my point. I like the number, fits well for him, but he's going to have to kind of break the curse right there. Colin Oliver, number 45, not great, not terrible. I understand it. You know, basically him being kind of a off-ball linebacker, special teams guy, edge rusher, what number do you wear? Somebody in the 50s probably would have felt a little bit better, but it is what it is. When you're a later round guy like a Colin Oliver, it's easier to switch your number later. And really any of the players on this list, probably besides Matthew Golden, because remember, if you sell an X amount of jerseys, you have to pay basically almost what amounts to a fine for all those jerseys that are out there to basically be irrelevant. So there is an issue with changing it. It happens for Golden. Everyone else doesn't really have jerseys, right? Or not enough that it's going to matter. So the only one that really matters is Golden. Everyone else can probably change their number at any time, but Golden probably a little bit more attached to that number 22. All right, so Colin Oliver, 45. Warren Brinson, 91. That fits. Micah Robinson, number 26. That looks great. And then John Williams, number 73. No concerns with that either. Not, again, that it matters. That matters not one iota, but it is what it is. It's fun to look at. It's fun to think about. The aesthetics, the vibes, the all of it, you know, it feels like it matters, even if we know it kind of doesn't. All right, that's all I got for news and notes. That's all I wanted to talk about today, other than just a quick, you know, behind the scenes. This is my first episode I've done in a long time that I haven't been recording at like 2:30 in the morning. And my goodness, do I feel spry and alive and excited. And it just feels totally different. So this one's at 11:11 p.m., make a wish. But it feels so much better. So hopefully we get a little bit more of a normal schedule here going. And it just feels, like I said, a little bit more not falling asleep while I'm trying to record everything. But always glad to be with you, whether I'm recording at 3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon, or anything in between. Savion Williams, I digress. Like I said, this is the most fun one that I have done, maybe ever. Let's start with the simple stuff. 6'4", 222. It's simple, but ridiculous at the same time. 6'4", 222, just a stud of a human being at wide receiver. Of course, wide receiver out of TCU. Spent his entire time at TCU. No transfer portal, no anything like that. He's been a Horned Frog from the beginning up until his final days in college. Was a fifth-year senior. He's 23 years old. He will turn 24 in November. So he's... I wouldn't say like overaged, but he is going to turn 24 in his rookie season. So it's worth noting, if nothing else, there is that difference there between a 20, 21, 22-year-old and maybe a 23, 24, or even now 25-year-old in a draft of just sort of upside and what you can kind of project moving forward. If there's going to be a lot of growth left or if there's, you know, a little bit less when it comes to that projection moving forward or that growth moving forward. Athleticism. No relative athletic score has been such a common theme with so many of these prospects in this draft class, but 94th percentile height, 96th percentile weight, 81st percentile 40-yard dash with a 4.48 40, a 90th percentile 10-yard split with a 1.53, 67th percentile arm length, 94th percentile hand size. We're going to talk about that. 93rd percentile wingspan with the size that he has, with his arm length. He has wingspan for days. He can go up and get the ball. We will certainly talk about that as well. From an athletic comp standpoint, on the RAS site, his two of the ones that stood out were Miles Boykin. If you remember, he was a big wide receiver, I believe, for the Ravens, if I remember correctly. Didn't really pan out, but he had like super athlete kind of guy, right? We're going to talk about the word gadgety here in a moment, but not that kind of gadgety type player, but just a big, physical, tall, athletic wide receiver. And then Joe Webb, he was more that gadgety guy, right? Minnesota Viking quarterback, wide receiver, did a little bit of everything, started a playoff game against the Packers. So those were the RAS athletic comps for Savion Williams. On Mock Draftable, some of the athletic comps included Tet McMillan, Alan Lazard, Demaryius Thomas, Josh Gordon, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. More probably height, weight kind of things than anything else, especially when he didn't do full testing. But those are some unique players out there that at least have some sort of athletic comparison to what Savion Williams is. But trust me when I say Savion Williams is his own dude, his own animal, and he's, you know, very, very unique in that regard. There's not one perfect player to sort of compare him to, whether it's athletically, aesthetically, or what he can actually bring to an NFL team. All right, PFF 2021. Had a 60.8 grade on only 205 snaps, had a 58.5 receiving grade. Remember, 60 is average for PFF. It's sort of their even line at their starting line. 2022 had a 58.8 grade on 707 snaps with a 58.7 receiving grade. In 2023, had a 72.9 grade on 554 snaps and a 73.2 receiving grade. And then this past season, a 78.9 grade on 525 snaps and a 70.2 receiving grade. Also worth noting, in 2024, had a 90.5 rushing grade. And it was not an insignificant amount of rushing snaps. So 90.5 rushing grade, but 70.2 receiving and a 78.9 overall grade in 2024. From a sort of statistical target standpoint, in 2021, he had 15 targets, caught 7 passes, 85 yards, 0 touchdowns, 1 drop, no fumbles, and a 64.6 quarterback rating when targeted. 2022, that was his redshirt. His redshirt season was a year before that. So I take that back. That was 2020. 2022, 46 targets, 29 receptions, 392 yards, 4 touchdowns, 5 drops, no fumbles, 119.1 quarterback rating when targeted. In 2023, 68 targets, 41 receptions, 573 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 drops, no fumbles, a 94.8 rating when targeted. And then last year, 90 targets, 62 receptions, 637 yards, 6 touchdowns, 8 drops, 0 fumbles, a 106.6 rating when targeted. So, you know, really, really fun stuff overall when you look at some of the like kind of playmaking in the upper side of things. But at the same time, you know, and when you look at the quarterback rating this past year, 106.6, but his most receiving yards in the season, 637 this past year. Drops we'll talk about, just kind of gives you an idea for what he did from a sort of box score standpoint and a receiving standpoint these past four seasons. In 2024, he also had 52 rushing attempts, had 322 rushing yards, 220 of which were after contact. 220 of his 322 rushing yards were after contact, which is pretty remarkable. Had one fumble as a runner, 6 touchdowns, and 11 explosive runs on just 52 attempts. In his career in college, and I really want to emphasize this, in his career in college, 1,659 of his snaps out wide as a wide receiver. Not gadgety, not wildcatty, not running back, not in line, not in a, you know, H-back position, not in any, not even in the slot. 1,659 of his snaps were out wide as a true wide receiver. You know how many he had in the slot? 256. Do you know how many he had in the backfield? 56. You know how many he had at quarterback? 52, and 3 in line. All of those combined pale in comparison to how much he played outside as a wide receiver. I think a lot of the scouting reports, a lot of sort of just talking points about Savion Williams has been gadget, 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 gadget. That's what he's going to be. Going to have to be a gadget guy. Going to have to be a gadget guy. I'll be honest with you. If you just watch his 2024 tape, which is what I had done prior to the draft when I watched him, you very much get that feel. No two ways around it. That's, I mean, they started just using him as a wild card, a wildcat quarterback and a running back and just getting him the ball in his hands, right? And for most people, again, another peek behind the curtain, what they will tell you what they're doing, most draft Knicks are watching 3 to 5 games per player to give them the idea of what the player is and writing their scouting reports based off of that. The reason being is because if you watch 10 games or go back to previous seasons, good luck getting to 100, 200, 300, however many prospects that you want to get to before the draft. Okay. So when you hear all of these scouting reports that say, you know, hey, just gadget guy, it's because they're going off the most recent season. They watched 3, 4, 5 of his games from 2024. And that was the indication that he gave. It really was. But you go back into previous seasons and guess what? Dude's a wide receiver. And I'll be totally honest with you as well. When I heard Brian Gutekunst say at, you know, when he was talking about Savion Williams of, you know, he was kind of asked about, is he a gadget guy or whatever? And Goot's like, oh, we view him as a wide receiver that, yeah, can do some other stuff, but he's a wide receiver. I'm like, I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm like, all right, whatever. You know exactly what's going to happen. You know, you're going to label him a wide receiver. Matt's going to get him in. He's going to use him as a gadget guy and he's going to become a gadget guy, which by the way, very well might happen. That easily still could happen. But after watching him in much greater detail and watching his previous seasons, I wholeheartedly agree with Brian Gutekunst. This is a wide receiver. And it's not to say he can't be a gadget guy. It's not to say he won't be a gadget guy, but he can legitimately play wide receiver. He can play outside. He can do a variety of different things. In fact, probably my more favorite aspects of him were at wide receiver. And as you go through it, you start early on with this tape. I went from earliest to more recent. And in years 20, 21, 22, 23, he's being used a ton as a true outside wide receiver. When I went back and rewatched 2024 and saw all the gadget stuff again and like kind of the wildcat stuff, and it's fun. There's a lot of really good stuff that he does with that. But I kept being like, dude, put him at wide receiver. He's been really good there. Like, what are you doing? I don't know if it was the quarterback situation at TCU or they just evolved the offense or just said, screw it. Why are we throwing to this guy when the best thing to do is just put it in his hands? It's whatever it is. It is what it is. It happened. But I kept wanting to be like, can you put him back out at wide receiver? Because he was really fun as a wide receiver in previous seasons. So I believe in what Goody said, that he's a wide receiver that can also do a lot of this other stuff. And it's just worth noting, 1,659 snaps out wide as wide receiver. From a special team standpoint, only 38 special team snaps in his entire time at TCU. 10 on kick return, 19 on kick coverage, 2 on punt return. Not a lot of special teams experience. Some miscellaneous notes. He was a Senior Bowl invitee. He had originally accepted, but then ultimately opted out. He was an honorable mention All Big 12 in 2023 and in 2024. He only missed one game due to injury, which was his final bowl game, which there hasn't been much information out there. I don't know if this is a, I'm hurt, I'm not going to participate in the bowl game or what it ended up being, but either way, he didn't participate in his final bowl game in college, getting ready for the NFL draft. I'm sure if he had any sort of banged up injury, anything, he probably wanted to be extra cautious before the draft, but that was the one game that he missed due to injury. He missed one other game due to illness. Not too shabby. He's been very consistent, plays a ton. He can take a beating. He's doing all this different stuff, runs physical, and has not missed any time, knock on wood, for Savion. But no, he's been very durable in his time at TCU. Daniel Jeremiah had him 123rd on his big board, and the consensus big board had him at 96th overall for, again, Green Bay's third round pick here. All right, let's get to our strengths for Savion Williams. Number one, team captain. And these, again, are not in any sort of specific order other than just, you know, kind of as my notes as I took them. Team captain, we know that Green Bay looks for these type of players, right? Somebody that is going to be a locker room presence, somebody that's going to be of good character. And usually those type of players work a little bit extra hard, a little bit more attention to detail, have, again, those leadership traits, and they tend to, you know, have a better chance of reaching their ceiling. So we know Green Bay looks for those type of players, but team captain, we know the athletic profile, right? he is a unbelievably freaky dude. We don't know the three cone, the agility tests, the vertical, the broad jump. My guess is he would have tested beyond through the roof. He has been on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. As Dane Brugler put in his guide, if you were putting the entire draft class together and putting a dunk contest on, he would predict Savion Williams would probably be the one that won it. Like, he is a A-plus tier one athlete. Just unbelievable what he can do at his size. I mean, some of the stuff that he does in the open field, from juking people out and hurdling people and going up and mossing people, it's unbelievable. I mean, he has athleticism to spare. And he, like I said, when it comes to that height, weight, speed, and then maneuverability, he's not missing anything. He's got everything that you would want and then some. Looks the part. Again, as you watch him, again, whether it's get off the bus or you look at him in drills, whatever it might be, he looks the part of a big-time wide receiver. There's not much question about that. Then, of course, we get to that gadget wide receiver question. And I kind of spoiled this one a little bit already, but yes, he has the ability to do a lot of gadget stuff. He could throw the ball. He's only thrown three times, but he was 3 for 3 throwing the ball, but he can throw it. He was rumored to have the strongest arm of anyone at TCU, quarterbacks included. So noted, I guess. But strong arm, and he can do the wildcat stuff. Line him up in the backfield. Line him up as a wide receiver. You can put him at, you can actually just hand the ball to him. Get a lot of like just kind of sweeps and just runs off tackle. And he was great at it. Reverses, end arounds, whatever you want to do, he can do it. So yes, there is a gadget element to his game. And you could very well see a world in which Matt LaFleur utilizes that in so many different ways. But I want to say one more time, I think he can be a true legitimate wide receiver. I don't think you need to pigeonhole him into that one spot. And as I mentioned, I liked him actually more even as a wide receiver as I watched him. Lots that he needs to clean up that we'll get to, but I liked him as a wide receiver and some of the explosive elements that he can bring to the game as a true wide receiver. But my goodness, if you want to get him the ball on some of those gadget plays, he is a great option for that as well. The big one of his true superpowers is his run after contact. We talked about it already. You know, we talked about last year, 220 yards after contact, just on running plays, 322 yards total, 220 of those were yards after contact. He is fast. He breaks tackles. He breaks ankles. He hurdles players. He had an unreal spin move that went for a touchdown. He's got everything. He is a pain to break down. Multiple clips that I posted of him making 3 to 4 people miss on a given play. One play where he made an unbelievable Dante Hall-esque cut in the open field. If you're not familiar with him, a Barry Sanders-esque cut in the open field made the safety in the, I think it was the corner, collide into each other and then reverse fields and went in the opposite direction. When I tell you that the highlights are holy crap highlights, I've been doing this for a while, right? I usually don't get too geeked up, you know, just excited, like almost just like giggly. I'm like, what is going on? What is this? How is this a thing? Like that's the experience that I had watching him. So many plays like that. And I don't know, being totally clear, I don't know how in some way you can't find a way to harness that. There's just too much there. Like there's just too much talent there. I don't know, even if the hands are an issue, even if the route running's an issue, we'll get into all of that. Even if that's the case, I just can't find a world in which you cannot get him the ball in some way and have him just cook. He's too special of a player. He's too special of a talent. Like, you'll figure it out. By the way, if you have somebody that wants to and needs to figure it out, Matt LaFleur is a pretty darn good option to have figuring that out. First contact is a pain. Good luck. He will break tackles. He will run through you. He will run around you. He will juke you out. He will just run past you. He's fast enough to do that too. So he's got long strides. Once he gets going in the open field, it's goodbye more often than not. He can win in a lot of ways once he gets the ball in his hands. In 2024, he had 111 touches this past year, obviously. 111 touches with the ball. He forced 40 missed tackles on 111 touches. Again, just a human highlight machine with the ball in his hands. Then you get to the outside wide receiver stuff. He's mossing dudes, like kind of consistently. Like, you throw the ball, and again, 2024, didn't see it quite as much. They didn't throw the ball downfield. He wasn't that wide receiver as much. 23, 22, even 21, you go and watch him, and he has the ability to just sky over corners and go make a play, back shoulder stuff, or just, you know, screw it. Savion down there somewhere, get it down to him, and he'll just outjump the other guy. There were so many of those plays where he made skying spectacular catches. Like, I kept, like, I almost like had to like turn down like posting some of them because I was posting so many. He is a special player with the ball in the air where he can just go and pluck it and just out jump you and out muscle you and out physical you and out athlete you. And I don't care if you're at 6'1 corner, like, he's 6'4, almost 6'4. He's just a hair under 6'4. He's got a huge wingspan. He's going to go up and he's going to get that ball. So you can use him in that regard as well. The high point jump ball stuff was something that was even better than I ever could have possibly expected it to be from him. Again, not great this past year because he didn't get the opportunities, but in prior years, absolutely. In the modern NFL, I talked about this as I broke him down initially right after, you know, we did the kind of emergency review. Think of the modern NFL right now. It's really tough to get those explosive plays down the field, right? Number one, I think Savion can. I think he's got the ability to win down the field, which is very important. You're going to have another potential field-stretching guy that can go and make some of those plays. But so much of the NFL right now is run after the catch, yards after contact, and defenses tackling or, you know, rallying and tackling to that player. And you better have some guys that in the open field can make guys miss and can, you know, get yards after contact, because that is so much of what the modern NFL is right now. There's so many checkdowns, little crossers, wide receiver screens, bubble screens, whatever it might be, that you better have guys that can take very simple 3-4 yard passes and turn them into bigger gains. He is meant for that. You've got Tucker Kraft who can run through faces. Savion Williams can make people miss and do a lot of stuff. Josh Jacobs can do that. Jaden Reed can do that. You have a lot of players now that you can put out there. Golden can run away from people. You've got a lot of players that you can put out there that can do special stuff when they get the ball in their hands. That it doesn't have to be Jordan doing spectacular things. That's just simple completions. Let your playmakers make plays. And I think that's a huge piece of this is in a modern NFL offense, you better have run after the catch guys, because so much of it, again, is underneath and check down stuff. He fits perfectly in that because he can break tackles, he can run away from players, and he's going to be very difficult to get to the ground, and he's going to break those tackles and have so many yards after contact. Blocking strength and impact blocking is a potential real weapon. We're going to talk about some of the blocking on the negative side as well, but there are some big-time blocks on tape. He can do it. He very much can do it. It needs to be more consistent, which we'll talk about, but he has the ability to be an impact blocker, and he should be a great blocker. He was not in college. Okay. There were moments that he was phenomenal, but consistently not enough. But he projects as somebody that can be an unbelievable blocking wide receiver on the outside. Hopefully he can get to that level in Green Bay. It was not at that level at TCU. I love his creativity as a runner. He is constantly finding unique paths to get himself free and find, you know, easier pathways to get more yardage. And the thing that I love about him is he's creative with it, but he also understands sometimes is that it's like it's time to get upfield. He's not a dancer. He will reverse fields. He will, you know, kind of cut outside, but he's not one to just get caught in mud and just be trying to dance and just staying in one place. It's usually, even if he is going to reverse fields or go in a different direction, it's a decisive cut and then go. It's not a, I'm going to dance to try to figure out something and then go. And then like seven people have rallied to you in that time. It's a decisive cut and then go in that opposite direction. But he's very creative with it. It seems like he has very good spatial awareness to understand where people are and where he can get to. And again, even like the catch the ball, cut on a dime, two guys collide into each other, reverse fields, get upfield. There's just very special awareness and special ability to have that creativity and know what to do with the ball in his hands that makes it so difficult for opposing defenders to sometimes even get a hand on him, much less try to get him to the ground. As mentioned, he is a legitimate human highlight reel with the ball in his hands. Get it to him. Good things are normally going to happen. He's got fantastic body control. Like, you will see him contort his body and go get passes. Like, there's multiple plays where he leaps high into the air, catches a ball like fading away over his head. Again, very impressive body control overall. Even, again, his ability to make these cuts at 6'4", like somebody 5'8 or 5'9 would be making. And you just don't see those things. It's very rare, very special traits for especially a player of his size. 3 of 3 passing, as I mentioned, allegedly has a very strong arm, and 0 fumbles in his career as a receiver, only 1 as a runner slash running back. Not too shabby. Only 1 fumble in his career. Takes really good care of the football. And it just, again, it hasn't been an issue for him at all. Usually we go directly from strengths to weaknesses. But Savion has something in the middle of strengths and weaknesses, and that is his hands. And I'm going to say this as clearly as I can. Savion Williams has Sex Panther hands. And if you're not familiar with that quote, that or that idea, that is an Anchorman cologne that he had. And it was called Sex Panther, and he used it. And he said, 60% of the time, it works every time. That's exactly what Savion Williams' hands are. And I can't describe it better than that in any way, because I would fight back on the idea that he has bad hands. Now, at the end of the day, bad hands are dictated by your catch percentage. If you've caught so many percentages of your passes, you've got, you know, great hands, and then so many percentages is good, so many percentages is bad, so many percentages is terrible. His percentage is not great. It would indicate pretty bad to terrible hands. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But the crazy thing with Savion is he will make some of the most fantastic catches that you will ever see. There are times where he just plucks the ball to the air. It looks like teaching tape stuff. He's got huge hands, which usually indicates, again, the better ability to grip the ball and get his hands on everything. If I were to put together like some of his best stuff on tape, you'd be like, oh my God, that guy has some of the best hands in football. It looks like teaching tape stuff. And then other times it is just... There's another Anchorman character we can talk about, Brick Tamlin. He's got brick hands. He's got Brick Tamlin mentality in that situation. Like, it looks like he's never caught a football before. Remember, like, I don't know if it was Charles Barkley or Patrick Ewing in the original Space Jam where the talent gets drained out of you and he's looking at a basketball like it's the first time he's ever seen it and has no idea what to do with it. There are times that that's what it looks like. It is the most Jekyll and Hyde anything that I've seen with a player, where it literally at times looks like A plus hands, and other times it's like he's never played football before. It is unbelievable. And I believe it comes down to concentration. I believe so much of the time he is thinking in his head that next step, like, how can I make that next guy miss? How can I run after the catch? How can I make that big play? That he doesn't make the easy completion first and then go make that incredible play. And he fights it. I'm sure it's probably become a little bit of a confidence issue for him, but it seems more of a concentration issue than anything else. It doesn't look natural at times, but other times it looks insanely natural. So he has Sex Panther hands. 60% of the time, they work every time, and they look unbelievable. The other 40%, not great. Not exactly what you're hoping for. Weaknesses, of course, are drops in focus. 10.4% of his career targets have been drops. That's a decent amount. So every 10 passes you throw his way, he's going to drop one of them. That is a very high percentage. Now, what's unique slash interesting about this is Matthew Golden was at 9.4%. It's a 1% difference. The interesting trajectory difference is that Savion had his really good year in 2023 and then his worst year in 2024. Golden was rough in his first 2 seasons at Houston and then looked much better at Texas this past year. If you look at their careers in total, it's a very similar percentage. They've both have had troubles with drops. But Golden's time at Texas, it was not an issue his most recent year, and he looked very natural plucking the ball out of the air. With Savion, his most recent year was his worst one, and 2023 was his really good year catching the ball. So it's probably a little bit more of a recency bias, but it is interesting that we talk about Savion of like, up, just can't catch the ball, 10.4% drop percentage, and Golden is literally 1% less in his career at college. So just noteworthy nonetheless. I would not say... with Savion, that he is this supernatural wide receiver, okay? He is an unbelievable athlete. He is a really good, talented player, even at receiver. Like, he's good. But when I talk about, like, and we've talked about this at corner wide receiver, of like, you look at him and you're just like, oh, that dude was born to play wide receiver. Just, it's so fluid and natural and just looks like it was meant to be. You don't get quite that same vibe with Savion Williams. That's not to say it's the worst thing in the world or that he can't go on to have a very successful career. It's just a different kind of wide receiver. And we talk about all the time, you need a basketball lineup. usually those bigger, taller guys are not going to be the ones that necessarily are the most fluid in and out of their routes. There's going to be a different way that they win. And the fact that Savion has the ability to win as that bigger wide receiver, a speed wide receiver, but also can do so much after the catch, that is a noteworthy just component of his game as well, that he can win in different ways. But again, he doesn't look like the most natural wide receiver at times when he's playing. I think a lot of like the tracking the ball and just again, the hands, those sort of things, it just kind of lends itself to that. The route running, those are all things that he needs to continue to kind of improve upon. He's inconsistent at tracking the ball down the field. There are plays, posted one of them, that it's unbelievable. It looks perfect. Looks like, you know, he's Willie Mays in center field tracking the ball and catching it over his head, and it looks gorgeous. There's other times where it looks like he's a little bit lost trying to locate the ball. So just a little bit of inconsistency there. The good stuff looks really good. The other stuff, again, a little bit off, but at least he's shown it on tape, and that is something that's important to note here nonetheless. Lack of special teams experience. He projects as a guy that should be really good on special teams, but he just has not done it. The blocking consistency, we kind of talked about that. He should be a great blocker. His size, his tenacity, his intensity, it's all there. And there are some big time pancake level blocks from him, but it's nowhere near consistent enough. And in fact, you can argue it's gotten worse over time. That needs to get cleaned up, and he needs to be a better blocker because he should be a big time impact blocker. And it just wasn't that way more often than not. Very raw with his route running, his releases, and his route tree. And that's again where you say this is more of a unique tool, a player that you can go and use, and he can overpower corners and just be still a really difficult piece to guard against. But his release game, his routes, his route tree, all of it, that needs improvement. For example, this past year, from a target share standpoint, 20 of his targets were on hitch routes, 13 were on slants. 7 were on screens. He had no other route that was targeted more than 5 times. So 20 on hitches, 13 slants, 7 screens, and then basically just a smattering of other stuff that, you know, was whatever. He's basically, I mean, really kind of like a 2-route guy, right? Hitches and slants. That's all it was. Now, in previous years, it was a little bit different, but last year, there was not a ton of variety to the amount of routes that he ran. His feet get a little bit choppy at the top of his route. He's got to clean that up. And then he has only one career 100 plus yard receiving game in 52 games. He's been around for a while. He's played in a lot of games. Only one time has he put over 100 yards in the box score as a receiver. So that's been an issue. And again, you look at his box score in totality as a receiver, his best year ever was 637 yards, 637, 573, 392, and 85 the year before that. He has not been a big time box score stuffer that has put up these monster games. Human highlight, ready to make a big play at any given moment, but he hasn't been able to do it consistently in games where you're like, yep, this guy's going for 160 every week or anything like that. And again, in fact, it's only been one time that he's been over 100 yards receiving. Some other notes that I have, there's a little bit of this when I watch Savion, whether as a runner or as a receiver, and with the drop passes as well. Think about a big time home run hitter in baseball that also has a pretty high strikeout percentage. You can get frustrated at times because maybe you're down by one in the eighth or ninth inning. You've got a guy on second base and two outs, and you just need to get contact and just get him home, right? And you still have this guy coming to the plate, swinging for the fences, trying to get that 2-run home run. He strikes out and it's game over. You don't get the opportunity to bring that runner home. And you're just like, man, I just wish we had a, you know, consistent hitter, somebody that's going to do some of the simpler stuff. And then, you know, the next day he comes back and, you know, hits 2-3 run home runs. You're like, oh, well, I guess that is valuable as well. You get to the end of the season, you're like, man, this guy struck out a lot, but he had 50 home runs, 120 RBIs, and, you know, was massively successful and a huge piece of what you did on the season. You know, a little Kyle Schwarber to him, if you will. Somebody pointed out in our Bleacher Report chat earlier today. It's pretty solid, you know, kind of comparison. A lot of strikeouts, but a lot of home runs. There's a little bit of that with Savion. You have a 3rd and 5 over the middle, and Matt LaFleur schemes up the most gorgeous play you could ever imagine to get Savion Williams wide open, middle of the field, easiest completion you'll ever see. Might bounce right off that dude's hands, and you have to punt the ball away. And then you get the ball back in the next drive, and he's going to go out and, you know, moss 2 secondary players for a 60-yard completion, or get the ball in an end-around, make 3 people miss, and take it 70 yards for a touchdown. Like, that's what you're getting with Savion. There's a very large variance. Don't exactly know what you're maybe going to get on any given play, but he has home run ability, but there's going to be some strikeouts along the way as well that you're going to probably have to live with a little bit. I think you're okay with that. I think the pros outweigh the cons of Savion, and you can understand why Green Bay would be very interested. And by the way, he's not a finished product yet. You're projecting what he's going to be. He already has all these superpowers, right? Now it's like, can you bring it all together? Can you make it into something that is special rather than just these unique individual things that come in handy at times, but aren't cohesive yet? They're not complete. And that's what the sort of job is for the Packers coaches, is to get him to that point. I think the upside for him is as a real legitimate weapon wide receiver, like a true wide receiver that can do everything. I think the downside for him, like a worst case scenario, is he can still be a gadget player. Like, yeah, I think that is sort of like the go-to, because you can see the vision for that easier, but it, in a way it's almost a little bit lazy, but that's like the worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is you find ways to get him the ball and he's still going to be special with the ball in his hands. The plus side is that he becomes a true well-rounded wide receiver that can do everything. And I think that's within his wheelhouse. But even if he fails, even if it doesn't work out, you should still have a weapon that you just have to scheme up a little bit more and kind of use him as that gadget guy. Some other notes: among 194 wide receivers with 10 or more contested catches since 2017, Savion Williams ranks first in career contested catch percentage at 75%, a remarkable number. I don't think that he benefited from the offense that TCU was running in 2024. And while he benefited in some way to do all the wildcat stuff and get the ball in his hands more, it didn't benefit him as a wide receiver. And I wouldn't utilize that tape in general to view him as a true wide receiver. Go back to 23, 22, 21, and you'll get a much better view of what he can actually do from a receiver standpoint. He also was way more open and then some of the opportunities he got. And again, I don't know if there's a quarterback thing or whatever, but there were definitely times where he was open downfield and the quarterback just didn't see him or didn't throw his way. That was definitely prevalent on tape as well. And then the other thing I'll just note here is, what if I were Brian Gutekunst, what I would be doing when I have Jeff Hafley and Matt LaFleur is I would have the mindset of like, I have two very creative guys. Let's get them some toys. Let's get them some really unique pieces that they're just going to have fun with and let them cook. And Jeff Hafley got a couple of those pieces recently, whether it might be an Isaiah Simmons, you know, whether it might be Oliver at defensive end, whatever it might be. You know, Edgerrin Cooper kind of is that way. You just go give him some unique stuff and let him cook. And with Matt on offense, it's the same thing. And with Savion Williams, you just gave him a really unique piece, a really fun weapon. And now you just say, hey, I got something for you. Let's see what you can do. And Matt's going to, I'm sure, already be jotting down in his notebook of like different things that he can do and drawing up plays and how he can kind of get Savion involved. And I'm really, really excited to see what that looks like. But that's a really good fit. I think it was Brugler, or maybe it was on NFL.com. One of them mentioned like Savion's going to be as good as the play caller is creative. That's a really good sign because Matt is very, very creative. Just some unique things that I saw of people talking about Savion Williams. Josh Norris, who does a great job, especially on wide receivers, but covering the draft in general. He said, sure, he's 23 years old and hasn't developed a precise game in 5 years at TCU, but he's freaking 6'4", 222, an absolute bull with the ball in his hands and has more receiving skills than given credit for. If you want the succinct version, very nice job done there by Josh Norris. I couldn't agree more. John Ledyard wrote, Savion Williams is one of the wildest tape-watching rides of any player in this class. Drops incredibly easy passes, lets himself get blown up by smaller DBs and routes and as a blocker. Also, mosses cats and makes crazy tough catches out of nowhere. Just a crazy variance player. Those are your snippets of exactly what you're going to get with the Savion Williams experience. What he can bring to the team in 2025, a developmental wide receiver that has unbelievable upside, depth in competition, a package player probably pretty quickly, somebody that you can get the ball in certain situations in certain ways, however you want to do that. But again, I think he can be a true outside wide receiver as well. Potentially a very unique special teams piece. I think you're going to want to see what he can do, but he projects as somebody that should be a core special teamer. A very capable run blocker if he focuses on it. He should be a great run blocker. He needs to be a great run blocker. He wasn't, but he has impact plays on tape, and I want to see more of that in the NFL. He's going to start as probably the number five or number six wide receiver that is going to have to earn himself active on game day. It's going to be between him and whoever the number six wide receiver is, the other wide receiver that makes the team. And if it's Mecole Hardman and you view Mecole Hardman as your punt returner, it could be Hardman. If it's, you know, whoever it is, if the other one has more potential value on game day because of blocking or whatever it might be, you could end up with Savion Williams being inactive, for those games, and the other receiver getting more opportunities as that true number five. But he's going to make the team. Now it's just, can he get active on game days? That's going to be up to Savion and how quickly he comes in, attacks this thing, and gets himself involved in this offense. If you told me that he was inactive for the majority of the games this year and spent the year developing, wouldn't surprise me. If you told me he was a legitimate, really solid contributor for this team, wouldn't surprise me. Develop him the right way, take your time with him, and prosper. He is a very, very unique tool, and I think somebody that has so much untapped potential. My final thoughts here, he is incredibly, incredibly talented. Savion Williams will choose how good he wants to be. I don't know if he understands it or not. He can be as good as he wants. Like, he has everything he needs. And now he's going to become a professional wide receiver that's going to go into a professional offense with receivers coaches that are going to give him every tool that he needs to be successful, with a really good quarterback, with a very creative play caller. The sky's the limit. He can be as good as he wants. It's going to be up to him and how much time, effort, and energy that he wants to put into it and becoming what I think can be an unbelievable wide receiver in this league. If you told me that Green Bay drafted an all-pro in this class, I think I would put my money on Savion. I think that would be probably who I would put the bet on, just because I think there's so much there. Now, he could easily bust. I'm not saying he's going to become an all-pro. I'm not saying he's an all-pro player. I'm not saying anything like that. He could just as easily be a complete bust and not work out at all. But if you said right now, Andy, I can promise you one of the players in this draft class becomes a all-pro, a legitimate all-pro, who is it going to be? I would say it's probably Savion. I think he has that much upside. That's the type of talent that you're getting here. If you also told me that he ended up with as many catches in his career as Amari Rodgers and it just didn't work out, I could probably see that outcome as well. When you talk about a high variance player, this is the definition. Now, he's so much talented, more talented than Amari. I don't really see that being the case. I just think that he has way too much skills at his disposal to have that outcome be the case. But again, there is some very high variance overall with his play, and it just gets to the point where nothing would really shock me with what his outcome could potentially be. I will defend this third round pick of Savion Williams to the death. I don't know if you liked it, didn't like it, or anything else. This has the ability to be such a high upside player. Take the home run swing, do it every single time. It may not work out. It could end up disastrously. He could be the next cursed third round player. We get back to that and just doesn't do anything in his career. Just nothing. I will still defend it because I can see the upside. I can see why you'd want to take the swing on it. I have no issue with it whatsoever. Don't care that they didn't need to. I can very much see why on their board they're like, man, we really didn't want to take two wide receivers in the first three picks, but we just can't pass on this guy. Take that home run swing every day, and I am here for it. Now let's see if he, you know, hit a double, a triple, a home run, or struck out entirely. We don't know, but I am all for taking this swing at this part of the draft. If you are a good draft and develop team, you just drafted a very special ball of clay. An older ball of clay might not be as malleable as you would like anymore because it's a little bit older, but a very special ball of clay nonetheless. If draft and develop is still your thing, develop this guy because he has that ability to be a very, very fun weapon for you. Don't rush it. Take it, give it the time that it needs. Put him in situations where he can be successful. Get him off to a strong start, but find a way to make this guy successful and prosper because, again, he can be special. Could also be nothing. That's the crazy part of Savion Williams. Let's see if they can do it. Let's see if they can really bring out the most in this type of player. I really think that at its best, he can be very unique. And at its worst, he's going to still be somebody that can help you in some way as just a unique weapon, get the ball in his hand sort of guy. And I am here for that. But I really want to see if they can get the most out of him and develop into what I think has the ability to be a really, just going to say really, really fun player. A really, really, really fun player. And if you haven't watched all the clips that I posted out on social media, I recommend doing it because you're going to get, I think, as much glee out of it as I did. Just pure unadulterated enthusiasm. Couldn't have been more excited. His path is his own. This is the beauty of the draft. There are things, route running, drops that he needs to clean up, but there is so much that you can't teach. And I am here for the ultimate outcome and to see what he can become. One of my favorite episodes that I've done covering a deep dive scouting report, one of my favorite players that I'm now going to be keeping a very close eye on to see what trajectory he takes. And it's probably somewhere in the middle. It's probably a okay wide receiver with some really unique things that he can do as a runner, gadget guy, whatever. But I think he can be so much more than that. And I'm crossing my fingers that this can be the one where maybe they hit on it aggressively and he really becomes that guy that can be a real difference maker in this offense. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Sorry, I probably went a little bit longer, but as you can tell, a little bit of unbridled enthusiasm for Savion Williams and what he could become in this offense. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Mo State of Minnesota, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Houle, and Matt Geiger. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.